I want to tell you about a new investigative podcast called She Has a Name. It's about a young mother who disappeared in Detroit in the summer of 1987. She Has a Name tells the story of loss and redemption, mending broken family ties, and facing the trauma experienced by countless individuals who've lost loved ones to violence. Join host Tanya Mosley and her nephew Antonio as they unravel the secrets of what happened to Anita Wiley. You can search for She Has a Name in your podcast app.
This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Isn't it equal?
Welcome to Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson here at WDET in Detroit, and with me in the studio is the show's producer, Carrie Jr. II.
Happy morning, Stephen.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Pretty good. So today, we want to talk about something that I think is really important when you think about equality, and that's the tension between the freedoms that we enjoy and the safety that we want to ensure, especially for young people. And we're going to talk about that today in the context of marijuana, which, of course, was legalized here in the state of Michigan by a voter referendum. And now it's as easy as going to a store sometimes right around the corner from your home to be able to purchase marijuana and use it.
Yeah, it took us a while to get here, but we did make it in Detroit in 2023.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who think, look, it's too accessible, right? There are too many places that are too close to things that we don't want drug use close to for some folks' taste. But there's another issue that has come up with this, and that's the access that some children have been able to get to marijuana. And in fact, the school district here in Detroit has been kind of besieged by incidences where children have either intentionally or unintentionally come into interaction with marijuana.
Yeah, and you know, Robert Vincent, who's a reporter at Chalkbeat Detroit, didn't report about this, and she talked about, or she reported about how unintentional cannabis use. It increased 75% among children ages 5 and younger from 2020 to 2022. And then for ages 4 to 13, it increased about 60% from 2020 to 2023. So we're seeing an increase in cannabis use. And then Robin Vincent also reported that the superintendent, Nikolai Vitti, is trying to focus on this. As you said, school district is also dealing with folks, with students using cannabis and using vape pens. With an incidence of number, the incidence I think he counted is about 750 involving both cannabis and vape pens. So she writes that, you know, child's respiratory systems can be compromised in the most severe cases with this. So it's interesting to see, you know, we have the legalization of the product, and now we're starting to see the unintended effects of it. And now it's time to have another conversation about what this means for us in our communities.
Yeah, and I will say up front that when we were debating legalization, you know, I'm all in favor of people's personal freedoms and the protection of those freedoms. But I had voiced a lot of worry about the things that we weren't thinking about that could happen if we legalized marijuana and didn't regulate it in quite the right way. I mean, there's a difference between making something completely illegal and making it so accessible that that the people who we want to protect from it can get it. And I think we're not quite sure how to attenuate that difference yet here in Michigan. And so I'm really eager to have this conversation and to get our listeners involved, because we are live today. They can give us a call and let us know what they think of the accessibility to marijuana and whether we need to go back and rethink some of that now that we have you know, we're living in an era where this is way more available than I think any of us maybe imagined.
Yeah, I don't think we foresaw this when we had those debates back and forth. Because now I have the questions of where they're getting it from and all this stuff I hope we can get to and get answered today with our two guests. So we have coming up first, we have Robin Vincent, who is, like I said before, a reporter for Chalkbeat. And then we also have our guest, Dr. Varun Vora. She is the director of the Michigan Poison and Drug Information Center at Wayne State University. We're coming to you next, Stephen. Looking forward to this conversation.
Robin Vincent, reporter with Chalkbeat. Welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephen.
Yes, and Dr. Varun Vora, it's great to have you here with us as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Robin, I'm going to start with you and the story that you wrote. In it, Dr. Nikolai Vidi and some others say this is a huge problem in the schools, and that is not something, as we were saying, that we anticipated when legalization kind of unfolded here in Michigan.
That's right. So this is really a new green frontier for us, right? And we are now confronting some of the unintended consequences. So as you've been discussing, Superintendent of Detroit Public Schools Nikolai Vidi is really the one who has helped to shed some light on this issue, one that we can be certain is not only happening in Detroit schools, right? cannabis is legal statewide. So this is certainly not just a Detroit issue. And I think that's important to acknowledge, right? But it was a leader in Detroit schools who was willing to come out and say this. So when I spoke with him, he told me that he's been hearing from many of his school principals that things have really gotten out of hand, that incidents with cannabis have become disruptive in the classroom, mm-hmm. right? And he also told me there were some recent incidents involving a second and a third grader. And anytime kids that young are involved in an incident right in school that has to do with drugs, that really deepens the sense of urgency.
Yeah. So how much of this is about intentional versus unintentional use? I think that's an important distinction.
Absolutely. And I think what we're talking about more than anything else is unintentional use. That's really where the problem lies. And that typically means that these are kids who are getting hold of their parents' stash, right? Because if you are a little bit older and maybe you're experimenting and you start to feel bad, you know what you've done. You're probably going to wait it out. You're probably not going to call poison control or ask your parents to take you to the hospital. And it also is not going to affect you in the same way that it would a young kid, both like from a central nervous system perspective, but also from a mental health perspective.
Yeah. So what would the school district officials here in Detroit imagine would be reasonable things for the governor and the legislature to do? Do they have regulations that they'd like to see put in place?
They do. So they want to see better enforcement of the packaging and labeling of marijuana products. And I should note, Michigan does prohibit edibles that resemble candy packaging, right? Like anything that
can't
looks
be gummy bears, for instance.
Totally. Or it can't. Yes, it cannot look enticing to kids. It shouldn't be in a package that says, you know, Sour Patch cannabis kitties, whatever. But those products still seem to be floating around. And they're also calling for detection systems in schools for marijuana and vape pens, which the latter, Superintendent Vidi said, is even a bigger problem, right? Even more widespread, the use of vape pens. And they also want to see public awareness campaigns funded through cannabis revenues and taxes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Dr. Varun Vora, I want to bring you into the conversation here. You're the director of the Michigan Poison and Drug Information Center at Wayne State University, which means you field the calls for unintentional drug interactions with people. Give us a sense of how big this problem is.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So basically as the state's sole poison center, we field calls from all over the entire state, the catchment area. So as was alluded to before, from 2020 to 2022, we saw over 800 ingestions reported statewide, at least for young children related to edible cannabis products. So that's over a 70% increase from the preceding over that time. So it obviously is a significant issue that we're continuing to actively monitor and play a role with either clinical management, education, outreach, and getting that messaging out there about the risks and sort of the low-hanging fruits for sort of risk reduction strategies that, you know, parents, guardians, caretakers can take, as well as for the healthcare providers on the other end who might be running into these in the hospital and treating these patients.
So give us a sense of the risk here, the danger. I'm not sure. You know, we've heard so much about how marijuana should be fine, for instance, for adults to mm-hmm. consume. How dangerous is it if children get their hands on, intentionally or unintentionally, this kind of drug?
Yeah, so with the, you know, as Robin alluded to, with the primary sort of prevalence of the unintentional cannabis ingestions among young children, there is an inherent risk because it's kind of multifold, right? So the active ingredients, the THC or the tetrahydrocannabinol, the concentration of that active ingredient seems to be going up or is more concentrated in products over the years. And if you think about a little kid, right, they're smaller than obviously an adult sized person. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the toxic threshold, it doesn't take as much of the product to cause adverse effects because it's sort of a lower, what we call a milligram per kilogram dose threshold. So it doesn't take as much of the product to cause the effects. And then as far as the amount that a kid could be getting into, the amount of product consumed seems to be going up as well. Anecdotally, that could be the case in terms of there's often products contain multiple doses in each package. So if they're left open, right around a kid, they could be consuming multiple doses all at once because, they could be thinking it's a brownie, a cookie, a gummy, what have you, and treated like normal food, right? Whereas they're getting probably 10 to 20 times the THC that they, you know, a normal adult would be getting.
Mm-hmm. So if this happens, what do you do? And when you get these calls, what's the response, I guess, to this kind of emergency?
Yeah, so we want to know, you know, we start with the basics, with triaging in terms of how it happened, when it happened, how much may have the child gotten into, and then we sort of counsel the caller, whether it's a parent or a provider, on the acute effects that we anticipate, right? So a lot of those will be like the central nervous system effects that Robin alluded to. So a lot of those will be sedation, drowsiness. They could have uncoordinated movements. And then it could progress into higher severity when they start having trouble breathing. And that's when we get really worried with the respiratory depression, as we call it. And then in severe cases, although albeit relatively rare, it could progress to respiratory depression to the point where they need intubation and mechanical ventilation. So they're going to be in an ICU. And they're going to be sort of comatose, and it's going to take a while for that drug to sort of metabolize its way through the child's system. With the edible products, however, it's sort of, you know, this is the nuance, right? We don't have a clear-cut picture as to the what we call the pharmacokinetics or what the body does to the drug compared to when people smoke typical joints, where the high is pretty immediate, right, within minutes, and then it kind of dissipates. Whereas if you eat something or you're ingesting it, the body has to metabolize it, right? So there could be a sort of delay between ingestion and when you start to see those peak adverse or toxic effects on the order of maybe 1, 2, even 3 hours. So it's sort of hard to gauge in terms of how bad this could get, but we always sort of want to err on the side of caution in providing as much information as possible and then having sort of a low threshold to get them to the emergency department once they do become symptomatic.
Yeah. Robin Vincent, talk about how the school district is responding when, for instance, this happens and you have an emergency of sorts that it's obvious that a child has had some exposure to marijuana.
Yeah, it really does depend on the state that they're in and whether it's going to be, if it's an older kid, it might be that they are going to have to do some substance abuse education.
Yeah.
Younger kids, of course, the parents are getting involved immediately. I mean, with all minors, right? With all students, the parents are getting involved. But a big part of the school's response right now, according to Superintendent Vitti, is getting them involved in education and helping them to understand like what it is that they've done here and how this can affect them. But, you know, we are also talking about younger kids. And so I think it's presenting a bit of a conundrum with how you actually handle that. And I'm guessing I didn't get too many details from Superintendent Vitti, but I know that within Detroit Public Schools Community District, they're trying to work closely with parents on a lot of different issues. And so I'm guessing that there becomes sort of this growing kind of engagement with parents when this happens to a child in school.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to continue this conversation about the tension between the legalization of marijuana and the accessibility or the exposure for our children who are not supposed to be users of marijuana. We're going to keep Robin Vincent of Chalkbeat and Dr. Varun Vora of the Michigan Poison and Drug Information Center at Wayne State University. We want to hear from you as well, the listeners. Give us a call and let us know how worried you are about children and their exposure to marijuana now that there are dispensaries all over the state. In some places, like Detroit, they're pretty highly concentrated. Is this something we should have thought through before we legalized marijuana? And what should we do about it now? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET. When we come back, we're going to hear a little sound from Nikolai Vitti, who is the superintendent of Detroit schools. We'll also hear from a member of Detroit City Council who says this may be a parenting issue, at least in part. And, of course, we will get to you, the listeners, as well. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
You're listening to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you've joined us. We've got Robin Vincent with us. She's a reporter for Chalkbeat Detroit. She recently wrote about the rise in cannabis poisonings in Detroit schools. We've also got Dr. Varun Vora with us. He is the director of the Michigan Poison and Drug Information Center at Wayne State University. What we're talking about is the tension between this new freedom that so many people are enjoying here in the state of Michigan now that we have legalized marijuana use and, of course, made an entire industry where you can go to a store, sometimes not that far from your home, buy marijuana and use it without worrying about the legal consequences. We're talking about some of the unintended consequences, though, which is the ease with which some children seem to be able to access the drug. That was not part of the design of the legalization. And so there's a real question. How do you balance that new freedom against the safety that we want to provide for our kids? And what things could the legislature or the governor do to regulate this more closely? We want to hear from you as well on the phones. Give us a call and give us your sense of how well we're managing the legalization of marijuana in the state of Michigan. Let us know if you're somebody who's just not in favor of what's going on. I remember really distinctly when we had this debate that I had real qualms about the idea that this would produce some unintended consequences and that we would suffer those more than we might even enjoy the freedom that comes with legalization. I'd love to hear from listeners who feel the same way. I'd also love to hear from listeners who think, well, you know, maybe this is just part of the freedom. In other words, one of the things we have to endure in order to protect that freedom. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET, and we can make you part of the program that way. Robin, I want to start this segment with a little bit of sound from Nikolai Vitti, who is the superintendent of the Detroit Public School District.
There needs to be more conversations, more thoughtfulness, and more guardrails put in place so we're protecting our youth as we have better protected adults with the criminalization of marijuana. Now we have to protect our youth with the decriminalization of marijuana.
So that was the superintendent talking about this letter, right, that he and the school board have sent to the legislature and to the governor.
That's right. So Vitti was saying that, you know, it's a real balancing act, right? When it comes to decriminalizing marijuana, we know that Black and Brown communities were hit the hardest back when weed was criminalized, and they continue to feel the effects of that. And Vitti said, you know, that's one reason it made sense to legalize it, yeah. Right? But now, again, we're going to keep going back to this phrase. We're facing now the unintended consequences of trying to sort of level that playing field by legalizing marijuana.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's start today with Jacqueline in Detroit. Jacqueline, what's on your mind?
What's on my mind is that my son... My grandson, Kaden Maluli, who's mm-hmm. 9 years old, mm-hmm. spoke in front of city council mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago regarding this same issue. His issue is that he lives in Beverly Hills. However, when he come to visit me in Detroit, once it's almost like he hit 8 Mile, is that the advertisement for cannabis and free cannabis increases. And his thing is that children can be misled. Mm-hmm. Now, this is what he said. Malachi actually wrote an article about Caden and Bridge, Detroit, regarding being misled by the sketchy advertising that these companies do. Because children, you know, don't understand. I had to explain to him about the advertisement.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just wanted to mention that
I think that's a great point to bring up, Jacqueline. I quickly want to ask you what part of the city you live in, and I guess how prevalent both the advertisements for marijuana are and the availability, like dispensaries and things. Are they close by where you live?
Okay, I live on the east side near Cadre and Mac.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, naturally he comes. When he visits, it's through the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And I-75 coming down from 696, once you hit like 9 Mile, I mean, it's just loads of signs
mm-hmm.
regarding, well, you know, some of them. I don't know if I can mention their name, but I mean, you've seen them.
Sure.
And so once he comes, you know, down into the city, it's like, and then even at the, what was it, the NFL draft, he was taking pictures of one of them that had a helicopter with a sign because he thought it was a crime. You know how people film crimes?
Yeah.
So he said, I'm going to film them and report them.
Jacqueline, I really appreciate that you called and shared that information. And, you know, congrats to your grandson as well.
Yep.
It's a big deal at 9 years old to go down to city council and tell them that this is a big problem. Dr. Vora, this question about advertising and packaging is a huge part of this, how we allow the dispensaries to market themselves.
Yeah, you're right, exactly. So, I mean, right now there's no real federal regulation for
the packaging of edibles. And, you know, as Robin alluded to, Michigan does have certain packaging standards. How compliant a lot of these companies may be, I think it kind of toes the line, and or how enforced these are. So I think a really prudent way to capitalize on the economic boom and revenues that these products are generating for sales is to put that back into the system, right? To provide product packaging reform, whether it's to better make them more child resistant, perhaps more inconspicuous labeling, to not make them as enticing to young kids. And I think it's sort of a multi-pronged discussion, right? So as we talked about before, I think a low-hanging fruit would be the role of the parent and the guardian as well, and I'm sure we'll get into. But I think sort of that combined spearheaded effort between more innovative packaging reform combined with more sort of parental or guardian oversight would at least help sort of mitigate these numbers that we're seeing.
Yeah, yeah. We had a caller from Livonia, Scott, who couldn't stay on the line, but he says this was foreseeable. What did we think would happen? He's not against legalization, but where is our common sense? A great question. I do want to turn now to this bigger question, I guess, of parenting and what role it plays. And I want to start by going to a caller, Ron in Warren. Ron, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I just wanted to comment that my wife is a teacher for a charter school in the city of Detroit. And sometimes I drop her off. And so I experienced this too. But when the kids are being dropped off for school and being picked up, you can smell it. It reeks of marijuana. And to me, it seems more of a not just a parenting issue, but also where are we allowed to use it? And the whole parking lot just reeks of marijuana every day.
Yeah. You know, Ron, I have to say that there are lots of places that I find myself now where I smell marijuana. And look, I mean, that was a foreseeable consequence of this. But there are some places that you're right. It surprises me a bit that I'm smelling it. I mean, there are places that I think we shouldn't perhaps be inundated with the idea that people are using marijuana. I would think, Robin, that schools would be at the top of that list.
Right.
And that may be an issue in DPS as well.
Yeah, I'm guessing so. I mean, and we're now, this is just speaking to this broader cannabis culture, right? And how this has just become more socially acceptable. And it does make me think about, I was looking at Colorado, which legalized recreational cannabis more than 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking with a toxicologist and lead researcher at the Children's Hospital of Colorado there. And he said, you know, we pioneered this. And despite our continued efforts, and it's true, when you look at the legislation in the State House in Colorado, it is a long, long list when it comes to cannabis legislation. The lawmakers there have been evolving this legislation and adapting it and working on it for many, many years. But this toxicologist said, you know, we've done it all. We've made the packaging even more child resistant, right? We have we've used a lot of cannabis revenue for education. And yet, he continues to see the numbers rise when it comes to the young people entering his emergency department.
Yeah, that is not making, it's not making a difference.
It's not.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Vora, when we think about the ways that we could, I guess, protect against the marketing of this to kids, what are the things that I guess come to your mind?
Yeah, so immediately things that come to my mind is, you know, speaking from our State Poison Control Center perspective, because we serve many different roles, I guess you could say, is that we offer sort of a clinical management perspective, but a big part of what we do is public health outreach, education, programming, messaging, et cetera. So a lot of the things that we often tell, whether it's on our social media platforms, whether it's on our field visits, et cetera, again, that sort of low-hanging fruit of messaging directly to those affected, whether it's kids, guardians, caretakers, et cetera. So very low-hanging stuff, keeping these products out of the sight and out of reach of children. It sounds very basic, but you'd be surprised that people get distracted, right, and leave things lying around in the vicinity of very curious children. And that's why we call a lot of these times these exploratory ingestions, right? So they're unintentional. Kids are enticed. They see something maybe that looks like candy or what have you, something mm-hmm. that they've seen before. But it's not obviously that. Not using while children are around, right? Yeah. So designating a time when maybe the kids are gone to bed or they're away at a friend's or what have you, dedicating that time to using when they are not in sight as well, when the parent or the kids aren't around, keeping them in a locked cabinet. So again, very basic. We think about, you know, the previous days with keeping the liquor cabinet sort of locked, you know, when a person's having a house party or something and the parents are away. Something like that. With young kids, they're not going to have sort of the tactile skill or know how to access those cabinets. And then keeping them in their original package and closed again, combined with a locked cabinet, and then keeping them somewhere safe and out of reach and out of sight where kids aren't going to go explore. I think those are, so again, low-hanging fruit interventions that the parents can make to sort of mitigate at least the risk in their household.
Yeah. Hearing you talk about that reminds me a lot of the way we talk about firearms yep. and kids, right? The level of responsibility that I think that we mm-hmm. are at least trying to attach to adults to be able to exercise the freedoms that they have with regard to, you know, guns, but also to keep children from interacting with them.
Precisely. And I think historically, if you know, with substances that have been made, if you go back through various examples, substances that are made increasingly available, there is sort of a statistically commensurate increase with pediatric exposures to those products. So again, it's just a product or byproduct of accessibility. And I think a lot of the other side of that coin is conflating something that's legal or accessible as being safe, which we clearly have seen with multiple examples is just not true. So I think, you know, the interventions that we recommend, that we tout and champion on our various platforms, on our website, social media, et cetera, combined with, again, say, in our role with the Poison Center, where we go directly to schools, right, with our educator, and our educators go to schools, talk about this issue, get in front of the kids, get in front of the parents. I think more and more of that, you know, it can kind of have sort of a snowball effect, at least in helping to get that messaging out there to say that, you know, just because this is safe, you see this in stores, does not mean it's safe. Yeah. So I think it's, again, a multi-pronged effort.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go to John on the east side. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So this is really close to me. I'm a recovering alcoholic since 96. And I use cannabis. First prescribed by my doctor before it was legal recreationally. And I lost my baby sister this year due to alcohol months ago. I almost lost my baby brother last year when he withdrew from alcohol because he was trying to quit drinking. And the alcohol has ravaged this Irish Catholic family. And I get irritated by seeing all the advertisements of the people playing volleyball in perfect bodies, and they're drinking up, you know, whatever. And I think the exposure to the capitalism part of this is what's so destructive. Now, my parents had the liquor right up in the food pantry, totally accessible to us, and we abused it, and it shouldn't have been available to us. All of us started drinking way too early, and sometimes in the presence of our parents, and because it's okay.
So John, I guess my question for you is, as a cannabis user now, how do you practice that more responsibly? How do you behave more responsibly than you feel that maybe your parents did with you?
Well, I don't have children around the house, so it's not an issue. But I do know that and edibles are a different animal than smoking.
That's right.
I have never lost control smoking marijuana, ever, no matter how much. But I know where I'm getting it, and I know what's in it. And I think the question I have for you guys is, what are the poisonings of the other drugs out there compared to the overdose poisonings of marijuana?
That's a great question.
I think that it is. You've got to take control of whatever you have in your possession.
Yeah.
You can't just let anybody. I had an edible in my house, and my dog got into it. And fortunately, he didn't get into the other one. And he was lethargic for, I was terrified, you know. And if that had been a child, that would have been criminal, I think.
So, John, that's a great question. I want to put it to our guests. I'll start with you, Dr. Vora.
Yeah, sorry. Could you repeat the question? I think he cut out there for a second of the other poisonings, and then he kind of cut out. What was the?
He wanted to get some sense of the comparison between incidents involving marijuana and children, I think, and other drugs, and children.
Yeah, so I think statistically, I'm not able to speak to the specific numbers, but we do see kids getting into all sorts of different things, and prescription medications would be the biggest thing that we often get called about, right? So whether it's grandma's diabetes medication, heart medication, what we call psychotropics or like antidepressants, etc., multivitamins, melatonin, it's again, a lot of this is a byproduct of the child having clear access when they shouldn't have, right? Whether the bottle was open, whether they were playing with the bottle somehow, it was already open or ajar, or they got it open somehow when they technically shouldn't, because the child resistant packaging should be quite difficult for a kid that age to get into. Mm-hmm. But that's often what we see. And then, when it comes to the flip side with illicit drugs, we do see, opioids, fentanyl, what have you, either, the cocaine, powders, patches, even kids do get into, and those can be significantly severe and fatal. Suboxone, the buprenorphine can be quite toxic to a young child.
Sure.
So we do see our fair share of those, whether the prevalence is higher or not. We have to run that data, but there's no shortage. Let's put it that way, because we get calls every day on those kinds of exposures.
Yeah. Robin, what would the school district say about how this fits into the broader context of drug use in the schools and unintended drug interaction in the schools?
I'm so glad that you are posing that question, Stephen, because interestingly, Superintendent Vitti at Detroit Public Schools said that they're not really dealing with illicit drugs. The big issue is cannabis and vape pens. Mm. And as I mentioned earlier, vape pens are making up the vast majority of incidents, and then cannabis would be a second.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as...
And the vape pens are generally just, it's tobacco.
Tobacco,
use. That's
not
right. Drugs.
Right. That's right. And that also, though, we can trace that back to what kids are seeing from adults, because I'm sure that you can think of instances where you're out in public and let me rephrase that. You're in an enclosed space where someone probably should not be pulling out a vape pen, and they're doing it like sort of in this like clandestine kind of way, and it's like, yeah, kids are seeing this.
Yes.
And they're emulating this behavior.
Yeah. Okay, I need to take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with Robin Vincent and Dr. Varun Vora about kids and cannabis. We also will continue to hear from you, our listeners, on the phones and on social. Call and tell us what you make of the risk of cannabis use among our kids now that marijuana is legalized here in the state of Michigan. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET. We'll be back with much more of Created Equal. This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson. Thanks for joining us. We've got Robin Vincent here with us. She's a reporter for Chalkbeat Detroit. Recently wrote about the rise in cannabis poisonings in Detroit schools. Also with us is Dr. Varun Vora, who is the director of the Michigan Poison and Drug Information Center at Wayne State University. We're talking about the danger that legalized marijuana poses to our children who are not supposed to be users. We'd love to hear from you about how you think we're managing all of this. Did we overstep when we legalized marijuana in the way that we did? Did we not think enough about unintended consequences like the use, intentional or otherwise, among children? And what would you do? How would you alter the scheme, the regulatory scheme here in Michigan, to make sure that it's harder for kids to get their hands on marijuana or other drugs? 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag CreatedEqual or at WDET, and we can include you that way. Robin, I want to talk about a section of your story that does talk about other states. You mentioned Colorado a little earlier, but there are other states as well that are struggling with this. Are there models out there for us to look to say, well, so-and-so is getting it right, why don't we do it that way?
I mean, I think that I wanted to look at Colorado because I was living there and I was noticing while living there that there were a lot of efforts in place to try and mitigate the unintended consequences, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, I think about in one municipality, for example, they were, and this is not directly related, but it's connected to the conversation, they were taking cannabis revenues and pouring them into a scholarship fund for young people, right? And that's just, to me, one example of getting creative with, like, the flushed coffers, the flushed state coffers mm-hmm. that we're now seeing from cannabis revenue. So, yeah, I mean, there's no need to reinvent the wheel here, right? Like this, yes, there are models, there are things we can do. And I spoke with someone who studies state legislatures. She's her name's Carmen Hansen, and she's at the National Conference of State Legislatures. Mm-hmm. And she's researched how states that were first to enter what, you know, we call the green rush, like Colorado and Washington, how they've incorporated public health into cannabis policy. And she was saying, you know, this idea of like constantly and relentlessly adapting, that is what these lawmakers need to be doing. They need to be constantly asking the question, are we doing enough?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Right now, the answer seems to be no.
Well, we don't seem to be doing much of anything. I mean, we legalized it, and there isn't a whole lot of regulatory backing for any of it.
That's right. And the catch-22 here is that, yes, there are there's a high concentration of dispensaries in Detroit, but that means Detroit gets more of the revenue.
Sure.
Right? And that can really breathe life into our city. And so then it becomes the question of, okay, well, how are we spending that money here in Detroit?
Right. Are we spending it in a way that maybe makes the unintended consequences less severe for the people who live here?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go back to the phones here. Chris in Grosse Pointe, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks. Yeah. One of the things that I feel like would solve a lot of this problem is, you know, I don't really see a lot of other medications or drugs being offered in these, like, what I'd call like a fun form, like a gummy or a cookie
right.
or anything that would make a kid want to eat it. I don't think kids smoke things very often, certainly, and that'd be pretty ridiculous to think about. I feel like it wouldn't really detriment anyone that is a user of cannabis to say, hey, if you want to, you know, have some type of an edible, you can either like make this at home, I suppose, or it comes in sort of a pill form like every other medication. I don't think I'd be as worried about my children getting into something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great question, Chris. Why do we treat marijuana differently from other drugs that you can't get in in gummy form. Dr. Vora, that's a good question for you, and whether that might be part of the answer.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you could, you know, by kind of standardizing it, making it more uniform across the dispensaries or the products, treat it just like, you know, regular medication, prescription medications with all the same bells and whistles in, you know, a child-resistant bottle that you get at the vet pharmacist, et cetera. But on the flip side, I could see it with the sort of cannabis culture that Robin alluded to earlier. Is what is one thing that their culture is sort of known for? Sort of like creativity, right? Mm-hmm. So it's sort of setting their products apart from one another. And it goes back to like the marketing, the advertising, and how do they distinguish themselves from the competitors? Because we've talked about, it's a tightrope balance between creative freedom, between entrepreneurship, which is, you know, what this country's about, and then obviously balancing the health risks. So I think that's a very nuanced conversation, because does that infringe upon the sellers in terms of their ability to market themselves if it's all going to be sort of one sort of standardized product that comes in a very inconspicuous pill?
Right.
And I'm not advocating either way. I'm just sort of bringing it up more for conversation's sake. Is does that sort of step on toes in that regard? And of course, for very good reason, right? Because we're trying to protect children. So I think that's a very nuanced sort of bureaucratic conversation that I'm sure would generate a lot of questions and possibly a lot of pushback.
Yeah. Carolyn in Royal Oak, you're next. What's on your mind?
I would like to know why we can't just regulate marijuana like we do cigarettes, like we do drinking, and not have any advertising. I see signs all over the place advertising marijuana places. I see no reason for that.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good question, Carolyn, because as you point out, I mean, cigarettes once upon a time were, you know, heavily advertised. They were advertised with cartoon characters in some cases, which people believed was marketing them to kids. Dr. Vora, why don't we think of marijuana, which is also, from a federal standpoint, treated like more serious drugs that you can't buy?
Right.
Why are you allowed to advertise?
I mean, my guess, like, you know, like you're mentioning with the smoking advertisements in the past, right? I mean, to think about them now about smoking in a hospital or health professionals, you know, the number one choice cigarettes for health professionals, it's kind of a weird concept, right? Because it's kind of antithetical to what you think about with health. And I think that's maybe sort of a stipulating factor here, is because as more and more research comes out with the therapeutic benefits of marijuana for, you know, anxiety, depression, whether it's, you know, athletes using it for pain management as well, you don't really see the similar side for cigarettes, right? It's not really used. It's not advocated for, you know, therapeutic use. Instead, it's more associated with, you know, cancer, lung cancer, et cetera, degenerative diseases, chronic diseases. So that's one potential thought, you know, that I would have, is why they are advertised for that purpose. And I think, you know, the criminalization is buried in a lot of social issues from way back decades ago with the DEA and whatnot. So I think that's a longer drawn out conversation to be had in terms of why it was criminalized in the first place, and then why not so much anymore. Because I think as more evidence comes out with evidence-based medicine, is that there could be, or there is a therapeutic sort of footprint that marijuana, cannabis has. It's just a matter of regulating and balancing those risks, those unintended risks on the other side, right? And how do we get it right? By allowing the people who need it most to access it while keeping it away from the people who it could potentially harm with unintended consequences.
Yeah. Robin, we've got about a minute left. I want to talk about what may be going on in Lansing to try to respond to Detroit school officials who say we need more regulation?
Yeah, I don't know that much yet is happening in Lansing beyond the fact that we do have some city leaders who are saying that they are going to try and push for a statewide coalition. Specifically, Council Member Scott Benson says that he wants to create a statewide coalition that would create a fund that would come out of cannabis revenue to the tune of 10%, and that would go for youth prevention and addiction support services. But there's talk at the local level, certainly, as well, right, about what can be done here. And I know that Council Member Angela Whitfield Calloway, who really was not happy about those billboards that Jacqueline's grandson spoke about at the city council meeting, she's also up in arms, and she wants there to be consequences for parents.
Okay. Robin Vincent, Dr. Varun Vora, it was great to have both of your voices here for this conversation on Created Equal. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is going to do it for Created Equal. You can listen to recent episodes at WDET.org, and we would love it if you would subscribe to our podcast. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. The engineering is done by Nate Bender. Our audio editing is done by Connor Anderson, and the music is from Sam Bobie. And Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.